Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and if you'd like to join us, you can, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Back in 1988, the number one question on the radio to me was, where's your shop? And that was a very uncomfortable situation for me, difficult at best. So what happens is that my mother back then was an executive at some big company, and she said, you really sound bad. She says, because you're saying the name of your shop. She says, don't you have any friends in the business? And I said, yeah, well, I do. She says, well, you should talk about your friends. So that's how the Best Car Repair Shops list started. And actually, it was the first referral list in Arizona and in the Phoenix area. So I geographically placed these guys I knew, and I had their cell phone numbers, and I knew they were honest and dependable. I circled the Valley area and tried to cover the middle as best I could. So since 1988, I've been telling you about good shops. It also says on my website that if you have a problem with one of our shops, my shops, and you go and have an arbitrator or a mediator handle it, and if they find for the shop, and the consumer gets them to find for the shop, or fine for the consumer. I mean, I got that backwards. The consumer wins the arbitration or mediation, and the shop doesn't agree to fix it again or give them some money back. And the shop doesn't agree to, I will up to $5,000. I've never had to pay the $5,000. Never. Because everybody does what they're supposed to do. Now, that doesn't say that we haven't had shops that have had disputes, but I think I've had two since 1988. Two shops that went into that. And just recently, one of the shops wrote a check. And it was a check that made the customer happy. And I was somewhat involved in that, but both of them did a pretty good job. That's an important consideration. I'm not here for me. I'm here for our industry. I'm going to represent the very best of our industry. So that's what it's all about. Speaking of good shops, Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing is in Mesa. Been there since 1970. Both Brian and his wife... Oh, gosh, I always mess this up. Anyway, Brian and his wife are always looking out for you, and both of them, Thelma, and both of them have a tremendous amount of experience backwards because their parents owned and operated gas stations in Mesa since 1968. So both of them have been around cars for a long time, and Brian and Thelma both know exactly what's right or wrong. They're on Main Street, just east of Stapley, on the south side of the road. They're the only shop in Mesa. I apologize to you, though, those of you in Mesa. There's other referral lists you can look at. They've got Mesa shops, but none of them that have applied, that's an important consideration, none of them that have applied have actually made it. So that's kind of something that's important for you to understand is that you apply, and some don't make it. Some decide not to apply, and that's okay with me as well. 602-508-0960. Let me also tell you and suggest to you some self-defense for car expense kind of talk. It's things that will help you if you just ask good questions. For instance, I'll use my shop as an example. It doesn't make any difference. The service writer comes out to you in the lobby or says to you that you need a transmission service and it's really best to do it right now. And you say to them, well, how many miles is it between transmission services? And they say, well, it's about 30,000, which you happen to be at 30. So then you can say, you know, let's do this. Can we walk out to my car, and you're talking to the service writer, let's get the owner's manual and you show me where it says I'm due for a transmission service at 30. Anything made in the last 4 years is going to go between 80 and 100. We used to do them at 30. And when they took that away from us, it obviously eliminated a 30 and a 60 service. All the newer model cars, all the older model cars had stopping points at 30,000, 60,000, 90,000, and so forth. Today, so many cars, I would say the overwhelming majority, I would guess that 85% of the cars out there have their first major stop, other than oil changes and tire rotations, their first major stop between 70 and 100,000 miles. So as you can imagine, my industry didn't like that. We didn't like the idea of all of a sudden the owner's manual tells the customer that the tranny service is 80,000 miles and we're trying to sell one at 30. It's important to know that the service writer is the contact between you and the technician and the shop. Oftentimes the service writer will just regurgitate what they've heard other service writers say, or they'll tell you what they've been told to say, perhaps by the technician. It's not, you cannot expect that the service writer can talk technical with you. But you can just hold their feet to the fire, just like you do my service writers and just like you do everybody else's. Then you can say this. You can say, I would like you just to write down what I need and put the price next to it. And then, you know, tell me what your name is and what your extension is. And my husband's going to ask for that. Or I want to check that out from the men's side. I'd like to check it out. So just write down what I need, how much it is, and then put your name and your phone number and your extension number so that, you know, I can blah. That really causes a problem a lot because you'll never get that back. You'll never get the call, and you can ask them, you can hand them your card with your email address on it and just say, you know, send it to me. But nobody's going to sign their name on a 30,000 transmission service when they know good and well that car calls for 90. Now, there are some other, as you can imagine, there's other issues. So they come out and they have your dipstick in their hand and the fluid on the end of the dipstick's brown. And then they have a new can of fluid and they pour it out on their finger and it's pink, it's red, it's beautiful. So they go, this is what yours looks like and this is what new looks like. We'd like to service this. You hope and pray that they didn't pull that dipstick out of a car that's already got smoke transmission fluid. You hope and pray that that fluid on the end of the dipstick didn't come from a container that somebody caught out of a transmission that had really ugly brown fluid. I'm not suggesting that this is permeates every aspect of our industry. I'm just giving you some self-defense ideas. This is how you take care of yourself. Then you always ask for your old parts back. Now, you're not going to want the fuel filter or the oil filter. That goes without saying. But you always ask for your old parts back. We had a lady not too long ago that had come in, and she had a traveling mechanic. And he came over and he pulled a code and he said he pronounced that this was wrong with it. So he went and bought her. It was an $800 part. And he put it on. He smiled. He disconnected the battery to reboot the computer. He took her money, said, thank you. So within the next day or so, the check engine light came on. She called him and couldn't get a hold of him, and he didn't return her calls. So she takes it to the local auto parts store, and you know the end of this story. It had the same code. So at this point, she took it to a shop, and at this point, she's out just shy of $1,000 for the service call plus the $800 part. So then she takes it to another shop, and they find that there's this boot torn. They replace the boot for $35 plus $75 to $85 worth of diagnostic fees. She's a little hesitant. She says, okay. Now she starts holding that shop's feet to the fire. And you can. That's okay. You can say to them, I want my old part back. So she drives it a month. Everything's fine. No more code. It runs better. It idles better. So she spent a lot of money, $1,000 on a guess. And I'm here to tell you that there's this new device on television that you plug into your car and it tells you what's the matter. Nothing could be further from the truth. I'm not sitting here trying to drive you to auto repair because it's okay with me. You decide for yourself. But this fix thing is a device that you plug into your car and it talks to your cell phone under certain conditions and it tells you what's wrong with your car. It's important to know that that thing we plug in just gathers codes. And so the code tells you your problem is in Omaha. But you still got to find the city, or in Omaha, Kansas. You got to find the city, got to find the drive, the street to the drive, and you got to get the address. So behind the code is what we call serial stream data. We can actually watch things happen. So, for instance, you have a mass airflow sensor code, which is a really popular code. And so what you do is you check what the mass airflow sensor is measuring. Let's pretend the range is from 1 to 100. Just pretend for you know, I can build a picture in your head. It's 1 to 100. So we want it to be about 10 at idle. So we start the car up, and it's really 5. Huh. So then we bring it up to 2,000 RPMs, and we want to see a number of 40. And it's lower than it should. So we're saying to ourselves, there is a pattern where the readings are lower than they should be. So then we go, oh, well, it's got unmetered air. So the engine is sucking in air. The problem with that is that it's supposed to all come through the mass airflow sensor that tells the computer how much air is being ingested into the engine. But if we have this pipe over here that goes directly to the engine and it doesn't go through the mass airflow sensor, all of a sudden we have unmetered air. Now that's serial stream data. That's going behind it. We're using devices that cost us $8,000 to $10,000 to talk to the car and see what the computer's seeing. But here, most important than anything else, you know what the numbers are. So if I brought you into the shop and said, okay, look here, we're at 10 here and we're at 30 here. And you go, those don't mean anything to me. And he goes, well, 10 is supposed to be 20 and 40 is supposed to be 50 and there's unmetered air in here. And do you run out of power? Yeah, I do. I run out of power. That's because the mass airflow sensor is gulping 8 and the throttle is at 10. So because the mass airflow sensor is at 8, it's not going to deliver, the computer's not going to deliver the necessary fuel for you to drive fast. So that's kind of how it works. The oxygen sensor. Oh my God, oxygen sensors. The oxygen sensor simply tells the computer the oxygen content of the exhaust. Here, let's pretend. It's 1 through 5. 1 says there's a whole bunch of oxygen in the tailpipe. No fuel though. No fuel. It says 5, it goes, oh my goodness, the oxygen is way low and it's all fuel. So we have this balance. Think of a glass of water. 10% water, 90% milk, and you flip the glass around and it's the same thing, except it's the other way around. It's the same way with an oxygen sensor. Low numbers are lean and high numbers are rich. So low says, I see a lot of oxygen, and we go, I want you to see a little fuel. Think about this. If my numbers are 1 to 5, where do I want that thing? Well, the answer is I want it in the middle. I want it 2.5. And then when I throttle it up, I want it to go from 2.5 to 5 and boom, come right back down. If I pull a vacuum line off the engine and I introduce an abundance of air that it's not supposed to have, then the oxygen sensor goes boom, 1. So 1 to 5. And in order for me to see if it's alive, I'm going to cause a tremendous rich signal and then lots of fuel. And then no fuel. So all I'm looking for is the parameters. But if the oxygen sensor is at 2 and doesn't move, and I create a rich condition that I expect to see a 5, and I create a lean condition where there's very little fuel but a whole bunch of air, I want to see 1, it's stuck at 2. Okay, it's bad. I want to tell you, on an oxygen sensor code, about 10% of the time, maybe 25 at the most, 25% of the time, we replace the oxygen sensor. 75% of the time, we fix the problem where the oxygen sensor is lying. I'll give you another example real quick. If the fuel filter's plugged up, then we're not going to deliver sufficient fuel to the engine. Because we don't, and we want to, let's pretend 50-50, 50% fuel and 50% air, when really it's 14, it's different. So that now all of a sudden we have a substandard fuel supply, we have a whole bunch of oxygen and a little fuel running through there. We have to know that the oxygen sensor is alive, so what are we going to do? We're going to check fuel pressure. Oh, fuel pressure is low. Replace the filter, boom. Oxygen sensor is talking, everything is fine. So you can't believe how many times that we actually change the fuel filter to fix an oxygen sensor code. And if you go to the auto parts store, he'll probably never guess that, and you're going to spend a whole lot of money. But at the end of the day, ask for your old parts back in case it doesn't fix the problem. Then you can take that mass airflow sensor back to the shop and say, I got the same code. I got the same problems. Here's my old one. Put my old one back on and take your new one out, and let's start with the credit for the new one. And I'm going to raise my hand and say, that's happened to me. 602-508-0960. We'll be back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 22 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. If you'd like to call and ask a car question, or if you want me to settle a argument between you and your husband about who's right or who's wrong. We can do just about anything you want. Just give us a call, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Gosh darn. Folks, you have to understand, I got so many papers in front of me and so much to do that I just lose sight sometimes. Anyway, 602-508-0960. One of the things that you can do when you're at the service drive and someone's trying to, well, someone's talking to you about a repair you need. We need to flush your injectors. We need to flush your throttle body. We need to clean the backside of your valves. We need to flush this. We need to flush your coolant. We need to do all that. Whatever they say, it's okay for you to say, what symptom do I have now that you're going to correct? And no matter whether it's a performance, an air conditioning system, a transmission shift problem, a vibration, whatever, they'll say this. And you go, I don't have that. Why don't you just write it down, put it on a piece of paper, staple your business card, and give it to me? Here's the issue. If somebody says to you, I need to turn your back rotors on your car, and they're warped, and you say, well, what symptom are you going to fix? And he says, well, when you come to a stop, the car shakes. And you go, yeah, that does that. And he goes, well, I'm going to fix that. Because the rear, one of the rear rotors is warped, and I'm going to refinish both of them. And you say, okay. Now, at the end of the day, when you pick up the car, that vibration when you hit the brakes and come to a stop is going to be gone. So, 1 and 1 equals 2. On the other hand, if they're trying to sell you something, our industry, and it's few and far between, they say, well, you need to have your engine flushed. And you say, well, what symptom are you going to fix that I have today? That with your engine flush for $199, they're going to have a tough time with that one. Well, it's not really a symptom. What it is the miles. Okay, so when am I supposed to do it? At 60. Okay, let's pull out the owner's manual real quick and just show me where it says that. So it's kind of a left and right thing. It's kind of like, do you still beat your wife? It's a terrible example, but if you say yes, you're an idiot. If you say no, then you're admitting you used to. It's one of those questions, and that's the situation you put service riders in, is what symptom are you going to fix? That's kind of an important talk subject. And then the other thing is, let me see what the owner's manual is. So those are the two kinds of things. Every day I get emails from people who took a car in, and they paid for a repair of a problem. It could be a brake problem. It could be an engine start problem. It could start, not start hot. Not when the engine's hot, not start when the engine's cold. It may not go past 55 miles an hour. Whatever it is, they call and they go, okay, I just had all this work done and I still have the same problem. And my answer's pretty simple. It's, did you ask for your old parts back? And nobody ever does. And then you need to go back to them and explain to them, it's doing still the exact same thing. I want to take your guy for a ride. And I want to, because I can duplicate it. It happens every single time. So I'm going to take him for a ride and I'm going to show him exactly what I'm talking about. And you say, I've already paid for diagnostic time. Am I going to pay again? And if the shop says, yes, unfortunately, we have to charge you for diagnostic time, then you've got two choices. You say, okay, I don't know if that's real smart. Or you say, you know what? Just give me a refund for the repair you did. And I'll just go someplace else. Because what you did didn't fix my problem. Here's the good news. The good news is if they say no, we're not going to give you a refund, then you go get a second bill that fixes the car. You have two receipts. You call your credit card company and you say, I want to stop payment on that $217 at Mark Salem's garage. And they'll say, why? And you write it up. Here's repair order number one. They told me that it would fix my problem, which is A. It didn't. I asked for consideration. I asked for them to look at it again on this date. They said no. They wanted to charge me again for another diagnosis. I took it to this shop, and they replaced something completely different, and my car is fixed. So I want all my money back from the first shop because they didn't do anything for me. I paid them a bunch of money, and nothing happened. And now most of the time with those two pieces of document, the repair or the credit card company will notify the shop that they're having a charge back. The shop will be able to talk to them and back and forth. It'll go. But more than 50% of the time under those conditions, where we actually have two different repair bills dated two different dates. The first one did nothing and the second one did everything. And the second one explains what they did and why they did it. And the customer says it's fixed. So those are the kinds of things that you want to be involved in. Alrighty, we've got a caller. We won't be able to get everything, but who might it be?
That would be Bob.
Bob, good morning. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. Last week, my son took his 2014 GMC in because it has 100,000 miles. So he's going to have the spark plugs changed, rear end fluid changed, and the brake fluid, not the brake fluid, but the transmission fluid and filter flushed and the coolant flushed.
Okay.
So they kept it all day. They said they should have it done about by noon, but they said they couldn't get the transmission filter. So they kept it till 5 o'clock and they forgot to flush the coolant. They charged me $830 for what they did. I got there at 5. I said, you didn't flush the coolant. They said, oh, well, we missed it. But if you bring it back tomorrow, we'll do it for you tomorrow for free. So I wasn't real happy about that.
Okay. I got a couple of thoughts. Those are 100,000 mile services. So I agree with the diff, the tranny, the coolant, and I think you said brake fluid too, didn't you?
No, I misspoke, but not the brake fluid. They changed the rear end fluid, transmission fluid and filter, and spark plugs.
Plugs, okay, I got that. Yeah. All of that stuff I agree to. I'll tell you what's going on right now in our industry is at least for me, and I'll talk for me and a whole bunch of other shops, that we all get together and cry on one another's shoulders. It's cold one day and hot the next. Half the people don't show up on Monday, and then we get an overload on Tuesday. We don't have enough sense to call the customer and say, I don't have time enough to do it. I'm going to put it in your file, and you get to hang on to it. Now, stay right there because I'm coming up on a break, so stay right there, and we'll be back in about 3.5 minutes. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We're going to finish with Bob, and then we have four lines available right now, 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. We're going to be here until noon talking about cars. If you'd like to join us, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Auto Dynamics is Sun City's largest and most trusted source for complete automotive services, says Mark Salem. It's family-owned and operated since 82. They really do good service. They know right from wrong, and it's a second-generation auto repair shop. Chuck Nide opened it. And Chuck Knighty's since kind of gone into retirement, but Derek, his son, is running it. As most of us, the second generation does a little better job than the first. They've been around the shop a long time, plus they have newer ideas. So if you're in Sun City, Auto Dynamics is on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. Hey, Bob?
Yes.
I'll tell you a couple things. Number one, I think your $800 for what you got is a bubble above normal, average. Can I say average? So I don't think that they took advantage of you at all at the $800. I wish they would have handled it differently. Wouldn't you have liked to say, we just messed up. We took in more cars than we should have today. You had an appointment. We just fell down. I'm going to put in your file that you get a free coolant flush whenever you want. So no matter what, here's my business card. I'm going to write on the back of it, free coolant flush, and they'll pick the card up, of course, when you get it done. But I'm sorry. I think that would have probably been better. You think?
Well, I mean, he did offer me the free coolant flush. I mean, you know, he did tell me that. It was just that, I mean, I feel like I'm just paying full price. I mean, $800 for what they did, and then my son's time is valuable, so he was out of his truck the whole day, and then he's got to schedule another appointment to come back another day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But anyway, things happen.
Yeah. I can't, I don't know the circumstances there. I think a lot of us would say, we'll get you a rental car. I think some of us, and it kind of depends. We look at your history, and you've got 37 repair orders. Plus, we got your wife's car, your car, and your son's truck. So all of a sudden, it's ooh, and your customer number happens to be 1,100, and the guy's got 38 or 40,000 customers. Ooh. So there's lots of options, but the service writer probably isn't in the position to do those kinds of things. They can probably give away the coolant flush, but the rental car and all that kind of stuff would have to go to the service manager, and then it'd have to go to the shop foreman, then it'd have to get the story from the technician, blah. So it could have also been that the guy couldn't get the spark plugs out and had to wait for the senior guy to help him. I mean, there's all these options. So I'm not really sticking up for them. I understand it's an aggravation to go bad, but you don't really have a choice. But I have some more bad news for you. Have you done hoses and belts on that yet?
No.
Okay. I'm just going to tell you my personal opinion. All of the cars, we have 30-some-odd cars in our fleet that include 5 cars of the management team, my kids and my wife and I, myself. As far as our cars are concerned and my customers' cars, I want them to change their hoses and belts somewhere around 80,000 to 100,000, and I'd prefer 100,000 or 8 years old on the car. And so if you said yours was 14, so...
It's right up to 100, and it's going across the country. That's why I was having it all. So it's going across the country for the summer.
And
the hoses and belts, too?
Yeah, yeah. Now, here's the key. You want all the hoses and belts back. You want to put them in a plastic Target bag, and you want to put them underneath the seat. Your son, God forbid, breaks down in some town that doesn't wake up until Monday morning, and it's Friday afternoon. He might be able to find some guy to come put the belt on, put the hose on. Maybe with a screwdriver, he can put the hose on. The old hoses and the old belts should be kept in the car as extras. You go to Wilcox, Arizona, you break down on Sunday, and you need a fan belt or a hose. Chances are he's going to have to go east or west to go get it. You're not going to get it on a Sunday. But if you say, ooh, I got these old ones. So my advice to you is you're at the 100. That's 4 times around the equator. And I don't know how many heat cycles where the car heats up and then cools down. The heat cycles is what really takes the hoses, but just simply 100,000 miles is the belts. So I know you wouldn't want that bad news, but my personal limits are 100,000 miles and 8 years. So I'm sorry. Thank you very much for calling, and good luck to you. Peter, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yes, I have an 87 Chevy P30 step van.
Okay.
And it runs relatively perfect, except for August-September time frame.
Okay.
On the freeway, it overheats.
Okay.
City streets, I could run all day long, no problem.
Okay, well, let me ask some questions. When you say overheat, does the red light come on? And if not, tell me where the needle on the gauge is at.
So the first time it happened, I thought the needle stuck or the thermostat stuck because
okay,
it would go.
Wait a minute, Pete. I know that you've come to a conclusion, perhaps what it is, but help me. I need your eyes to tell me what you're seeing. Do you have a gauge or do you have a light?
I have a gauge, and the check engine light came on once.
Okay, we're going to ignore the check engine light. So, for now, because the like check engine light is yellow and amber. That just means caution.
Yeah.
I want to know, when it's running normal, where is it on the gauge? Quarter, half, three-quarter, or is it flirting with the red zone?
Slightly above half.
Okay, that's normal. And then where does it go when it gets hot, when it overheats?
Pegs out and high.
Okay, so we're in the red zone?
Yes.
Okay, and what do you do? Is it spitting coolant at that point?
I bought it used. So the first time it happened, it was just before red, and then if I slowed down, it would drop back down to normal. And then if I wasn't paying attention, it would go back up towards the red. And then when I finally pulled over and looked, there was no discernible coolant in it. So I replaced all the coolant. And then when I checked it again 3 or 4 days later, half the coolant was gone.
Okay. When you start it up after it sat all night long, when you start it up, does it idle kind of poorly for the count of 4 or 5 and then all of a sudden mysteriously just hum like a sewing machine?
I haven't noticed it acting weird. Just pretty much starts up and runs normal.
And there's nothing on the ground?
No.
Okay. Well, I'm thinking out loud now. As a matter of fact, I'm going to take a break. You stay right there. I'm going to think out loud, and you and I are going to have more discussions. So just hang on a minute. Anybody else? 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We'll be back. Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. I'm going to go back to Peter just like I said I would, and then I'm going to get any other calls, 602-508-0960. We're going to be back at, well, we're going to take a break at 11, and then we're going to go till 12, so you're out, lots of time to call. Peter, what I hear you saying is we have two issues here. When I'm driving around town, I'm not anywhere close to the red zone. I'm normally driving right around the half mark. When I get on the freeway at freeway speeds, the temperature rises, and if I wait, it'll hit the red zone, and I'll pull off, and then I'll check the coolant, blah, 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 and then I'll take off again, and or I'll get in the city streets, and it won't run hot. And that's number one. And number two is twice I found the cooling system empty. Have I got that right?
Yes, with one caveat.
Okay.
The second time I filled it, I noticed that the reservoir was bone dry, and the little, I don't know what the tube is that connects the radiator to the reservoir.
Yes.
That was missing. Once I replaced it, it's been 4 months now, and no coolant has evaporated, gone okay. missing, or anything else.
That's $3,000. Okay, all right. Up until the time you said that the hose is missing from the radiator neck to the overflow jug, I was going with a $3,000 or $4,000 work. Because you're telling me
yeah.
I've got an unexplained loss of coolant and I don't have anything on the ground. So it's
correct.
Head gaskets, and that's why I ask you, how does it run after you start it up when it's been sitting hot? And we pump coolant, because of the pressure of the cooling system, we pump coolant into one or two cylinders, and it runs rough until we get the water out and the gas in. So you've answered that question, and what's going on here is that the coolant on hot, the cap releases and puts coolant in the overflow. That's why the hot mark is the highest mark. Then when you park the car, as the coolant drops down in the radiator, it sucks coolant back out of the jug, and that's why the cold mark's real low. So you're just puking coolant out, but there ain't nothing coming back in. So we're going to set aside the coolant issue because you fixed it. But what I hear you saying is around town I'm fine, but I get on the highway and I'm getting into the red zone, right?
Midsummer, yes. Not right at this time of year. It's running
okay.
just fine on the freeway.
Okay. The only thing it could be is the fan clutch or the radiator's is plugged. Because if you're forcing water into a radiator that's 10 to 30 to 40% plugged, then instead of the water going into the radiator, the water, pretend it's a 1-inch hose coming in, and let's pretend that it's got the capability of three hoses. So we got water coming in and just lazily going through the radiator and going back out, being sucked by the engine on the lower hose. So hot water comes into the radiator, it falls through the radiator, at the bottom it gets sucked back into the engine and it loses 20 degrees somewhere in there in that process. So in your particular case, if the radiator's plugged up, then the water comes in, but it goes through the radiator so fast it doesn't have time to drop its heat off because you have, let's pretend you got 100 horizontal tubes. You don't, but let's pretend. It's easier from my math. So you got 100 tubes, 50 of them are plugged up. So instead of the water coming in and taking 100 tubes from driver's side to passenger side or from passenger side to driver's side, either however the horizontal radiator flows, then it just lazily goes by and drops off all this heat. But now all of a sudden half the radiator's plugged, so the water comes in, high pressure behind it, and goes through. So now the fan clutch could cause that as well. Do you ever hear the fan clutch come on? It'll sound like you just dropped to second gear. Have you ever heard that?
Sometimes.
Okay. That's good. That's good. That's what I'm looking for. You see, if you never hear the fan clutch lock up, it has a temperature sender in the front of it. So when it senses heat, you should hear that whirring. It sounds like a helicopter. It sounds like a big fan underneath the hood. So yeah, I'm expecting that. If the fan clutch isn't working at 60, 70 miles an hour, we're pushing so much air across the grill that we don't even need the fan. at 60 miles an hour, 70, 80 miles an hour, if your wife's driving 90 miles an hour, lots of air is coming through the grill, lots of air is going over the condenser, and lots of air is going through the radiator. So we don't really need a fan, but I'm happy to hear the fan clutch is coming on. So I would think, how many miles are on your van?
Tad under 300,000.
Okay. You know, there, a lot of us have these infrared devices, and we take your car for a ride, and then we put this little thing on it with the television screen, and we go, oh, my God, the whole bottom third of this radiator is hot. And so we're done. We're done. So the symptoms you have indicate clearly it's not the thermostat. You say it's not the, well, you'll get into the summertime to see if it's the loss of coolant that didn't have the hose between the radiator neck and the overflow jug. But if you continue to have problems high speed and everything's cold on the slow side, then the radiator is going to have to come out and probably be replaced. That's my guess. Okay?
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Good luck to you. We don't have any other callers, right? Oh, we do. Go.
Yeah, say hello to Ron.
Ron, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning. I'm up in Payson, Arizona. I've got a Ford Ranger 2010. It's an automatic V6 four-wheel drive. I've got 40,000 miles on it, so I put on about 4,000 miles a year. Okay. And I know you've, I'm a fairly new listener, but I'm sure you've told 100 people this. I need to know what you think about changing automatic transmission fluid. We've got several people up here, but not too many, and they're all over the map between never changing it to every 30,000 miles, every 15. And I know the new cars don't even have dipsticks, you know. So I, what do you think on a 2010 Ranger, when should I change that transmission fluid? Or Okay. Do I flush it and et cetera? What do you think?
Before, and I agree with you. I'm up in Payson right now, too, but I'm not going to tell you where I live. And I'm teasing you. how many of those people that told you whatever they told you, how many of them pulled the dipstick out and smelled it?
The ones that tell me that are behind the desk, and none
okay.
of them.
Okay.
You know, and they don't have a good record up here of following through. If you tell them to put 40 pounds of air in your tires, yeah. When you take it home and check it, they didn't put any in there.
Okay.
So that's
okay.
kind of it.
And you know what? That happens in every city in the valley as well. So my industry oftentimes doesn't listen as well as they should. In your particular case, I would want to look at the fluid and smell it. I would want you to pull the dipstick out, have a white paper towel next to you, take the paper towel, wipe off the dipstick, and look at the fluid. If the fluid is chocolate brown, if the fluid looks burnt, yes. If the fluid is cherry red and looks pretty and it's opaque, you can see the towel through it, then no. That's it. And it's unfortunate that none of them went out to your car and pulled a dipstick. Now, let me tell you, I would agree that the car is, what, 10 years old?
10 years old, 40,000 miles.
Okay. I'm not real concerned about the transmission on your car because I'm betting that you're going to pull at this dipstick and say it's pink and it's opaque and everything's fine.
Now and I have looked at it.
Okay.
Yep, I have looked at it, and it is pink.
Okay. Know. Then the answer, no. Now, let me ask you about your 4,000 miles. When do you change your oil?
Once a year.
Okay. Good. That's exactly right. And I hope you do it in April, at the beginning of the summertime. So you go through April, May, June, July, and August, and September, you go through with fresh oil. So I agree. I'm concerned about everybody being able to tell you what to do without walking out there and looking at it. It's just, and for you to say nobody did that, then I'm going to tell you that I wouldn't listen to any of them. Let me make a suggestion to you. Not on a Monday morning or a Friday afternoon, for obvious reasons. I want you to stop by Fletcher's and ask for Randy. Okay?
Okay.
I know him.
And I think Fletcher's is gone. They're not here anymore. They sold out to another company, to Firestone.
Yeah, you're right. Go talk to Randy. Just tell him that one of your neighbors suggested that you just talk to Randy, and then you say, Randy, Mark said you'd check my fluid and smell it and tell me if it needs to be replaced. Mark, the guy with horses and the diesel that you helped him with the other day.
Perfect.
Okay? So Randy should do that for nothing. Walk out there and tell him if there's a charge that Mark Salem will send him $10.
Oh, I'd give him $10 if he gave me an honest opinion, you know.
He'll have more fun trying to collect $10 from me than he will anything else. But I'll pay him. But anyway, you just go to Randy and have him smell it. Now, there is a don't say any names. There is a transmission shop in town. You can go back to them and say to them, please pull the dipstick. Now, here's the real killer. You say, what kind of fluid does my Ford take? This stuff right here. Would you pour a little bit on my fender right here? Put a drop that's going to be about the size of a dime right there. Now, pull my dipstick out. Take the end of the dipstick and tap it right next to that other one. I want to see new and I want to see old.
Good point.
This is what the good guys think of. Now, my head's broken, and you know what the difference between RAM and your hard drive? RAM is like memory this minute, and hard drive is your whole life. Both of mine have been scrambled more than once. So in my defense, I laugh at stuff like that, but my sick mind thinks of that. So does everybody else. Whether they do it or not is a different story. So go talk to Randy. I think, but at this particular point, if you looked at it and it's opaque, you can see the dipstick through the oil and it's nice and strawberry colored, nice and cherry colored, pink. I'm saying not yet. Okay.
Okay, and what do I fully flush it? Because that's what they tell you, too. Some say, nope, we just pull the filter, put in 4 quarts or whatever. The other, we flush it through with 16 quarts, and some say, oh, don't do that. You knock all the sediment loose in there. And what okay. Do you recommend, a full flush, or do you recommend just a drain and a new filter?
If great question. Great question. I'm going to change everything. I'm going to say to you, is it Ron or Don?
No, Ron.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I just couldn't tell my R.
That's okay.
I would say to you, this is what I would say, and this is what the majority of us say. Ron, I want to pull the pan and do the filter because I want to look and see what's inside the pan. I don't want any broken snap rings. I expect some little bitty piles of a black material, which is clutch material, and I want to see a little bit of flaking of metal because the first 40,000 miles, it's going to break the transmission, and we're going to polish everything inside. So then I want you to come back whenever you want. If you're going to do it at 40, fine. If you're going to do it at 50, then do the next one at 100, whatever. And then the next time you come in, I want to flush it. So I want to see what's in the oil pan. I want to see if there's a problem. I want to see what it looks like. Then the next time, I'm going to flush it. And yeah, it's going to take, I don't know if it takes 16 quarts or not, but you flush it in until the stuff comes out of the other end. And we're not going to pull the pan. We're not going to look at the filter. It's just, and you're done. So the flush is obviously a little bit more money because we're going to have to spend a little bit more time. Plus, we're going to have to disconnect a couple lines, hook it up to the machine, and then we watch these clear lines and we see what going in. It looks like strawberry water, and what comes out looks like a little bit of chocolate milk. And we do that till we get clean on the outside, and then we're done. So my respond to you is the first time we do filter and fluid, the second time we flush. Okay?
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Very thorough. You were perfect. You give me the answers I needed. I appreciate it.
Oh, you bet.
Have a good day.
And to you too, Ron. Folks, I'm going to tell you a story, but I'm going to tell you the other end on the break. A friend of mine calls me, and here's how important the conversation is. I stop by his house to leave some vacuum parts off for his wife's vacuum, and he says, oh, my cruise control doesn't work on my Dodge truck. So I said, okay, let me check the fuse. And I check the fuse, and it's a 2-amp fuse. I find it, and it's number 7 or number 10 in the panel. And it's working. I got power on both sides. He said, I just took it out and looked at it, and I said, I don't want you to do that. I want you to take a 12-volt test light, turn the key on, start the thing, whatever, and touch the left side of the fuse and right side of the fuse, and you better have the light on both of them. I don't want to look at the fuse because that's just not good. So I go drive the car, and I hook my foot underneath the brake pedal, and I pull the brake pedal towards me. Because sometimes the switch will cancel the cruise control, and if the switch is out of bounds, then the cruise control won't set. So I pull the brake pedal towards me, and I'm driving, and I turn it on, and then I push set and resume, and nothing happens. So we go back, and I say to him, Daryl, have you ever had any problems with your air conditioning system? And he used some bad words, and he said, why are we talking about the air conditioning system? And I said, because I need to know the answer. Have you ever had a problem with blowing through the center vents or the defrost or the floor when you didn't ask for it? So on the other side of the break, I'll tell you the end of the story, but you'll find it amusing because we're actually able to fix the car by talking.
Now, once again, here's Mark.
Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11. I'm your host for the next hour. We're talking about car repair. Let me just tell you some history. I've been in the car repair business since 1968 when I pumped gas when I was in high school. And I opened my own shop in 1979, and I've been in the car repair business, plus I'm a master tech. And so I'm an ASE master tech, and so are many of the guys that work for me. So I'm not the smartest guy in the world. I've been a consumer advocate for people in the auto repair that have problems with our repair industry. I'm hired by insurance companies and lawyers and the law enforcement to tell them what industry standards are. So I do have some credentials, but the bottom line is it's a give and take. That's what's important. Before I finish the story, Strictly Diesel and Service and Repair is owned by Nate. Nate's the kind of guy you hope your daughter brings home. He's just the salt of the earth. He's a great guy. He does nothing but diesels, but he'll change the oil on your wife's car. So they work on foreign and domestic lights diesel trucks, I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road, Strictly Diesel, Service and Repair. They've got a website that's just awesome, and you can go on there if you're a diesel guy, and you can look at all kinds of ads and repairs that they have. And they even have parts on the dipstick. When the dipstick goes bad, they have a part to fix that that nobody else has, that they designed and then they built. So Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is a great place to go. Let me finish my story, and then I'm going to take the caller. So at the end of the day, I'm working on a friend of mine's a Dodge truck that doesn't have cruise control. So I say to him, and we got the hood open, I says, hey, when you ask in your air conditioning, if you ask for vent, there's three different places you're going to get air out of your vehicle: the windshield, the center, and the floor. Okay, so I say to him, when you switch between floor and center and defrost, or from defrost all the way to floor, does the air change? And he goes, we're working on the cruise control. And I said, answer the question or I'm going home. That's all there is to it. And he goes, no, everything's fine. Here's the madness behind it. Diesels, first of all, diesels don't have vacuum, but your gas cars do. We use vacuum to open and close all kinds of dashboard things. So when you pick a top vent, a defrost or center vent or low, we're going to use electricity on the newer model cars, but all the older model cars, we're going to use vacuum to open and close doors. So we're going to open the top vent, and it's going to blow up the windshield, and then we're going to close or go to the middle. But anyway, we use vacuum. So I say to him, the reason I ask you that is because you have a vacuum pump and you have all these vacuum lines going everywhere, and the servo, which is the brain of your cruise control, has a vacuum line to it. It also has a cable that goes to the throttle, and it's underneath this battery right here. Now notice, there's this, you've got a wire coming out, but next to it is this little bitty vacuum line. Now look here, and I pull on it, and it comes right out of its container. It's kind of a webbed kind of stuff that holds the wires all together. So I pull it out and I go, this should be connected down there. And it's not, but the vacuum pump is working. So it's not the absence of vacuum, it's the absence of vacuum to the servo. Take the battery out. You're going to see how this goes in. Now, what you're going to need is a small piece of windshield washer hose, because the other end's going to be broken. So you're going to spit on your fingers and put it on the broken end and slide the little piece of hose over. Then you're going to take the other side and you're going to spit on the vacuum line. And then you're going to slide it in the other side. You're going to have this little patch, and it'll fix and it'll work. And he looks at me and he just shakes his head. That's all he does. He's just, I said, you know what? I'm done free diagnosing for you. I'm leaving. And we laugh. He's a good friend of mine. So I stopped by later to give him some more parts for his wife's vacuum that I helped him fix. And I saw your cruise control, and he goes, everything you said was exactly right. I took the battery off. He says underneath was a broken line. I put the rubber here. But he said I took a big piece of heater hose and I wrapped it around everything, the throttle cable and the vacuum, and then I taped it up real tight. And I said, why did you do that? And he goes, well, I think that the rats chewed it in half. And I said, but if you looked at the end of both pieces, they were just flush. They were cut like a knife. That's where it just broke. But that's okay. If you wrap it up because the rats are eating your underneath your hood, which happens in Payson, then it's okay. But because we had a conversation and because he answered the questions with yes, no, or I don't know, that's how you fix a car. So if you want to spend $110 to $150 an hour to have your technician go do what you could have done by just answering questions. Now, it's important that they do ask you questions. So I'm not bragging about my skills. Just half the guys in my shop could have figured that out. Half the guys I know that work shops could have figured that out. The idea is we get to talk to you and ask you questions, and that allows us. This would have been a $50 diagnosis, and it would have been a $60 repair. Because you have to take the battery off, take all the cables off to get to the servo below it. Then you're going to clean the servo off. Then you're going to put it together. Then you're going to go drive it, put the battery back in it, go drive it, blah, blah, blah. So at a rate of $120 to $130, $140, it's going to be that. So it's just something that's simple. It's better than paying somebody $200 or $300 to find it and diagnose it, and then $50 to fix it. It's better than that. So anyway, who have we got on the phone?
We have Wayne.
Wayne, good morning.
Good morning. I have a little longer-term question. 2005, Chrysler Town & Country, 3.3 liter V6 engine, 220,000 miles.
Hey, I can hardly hear you. Would you? Hold on. If you're on Bluetooth, I need you on your phone because I just need to be able to hear you a little bit better, okay?
Sure. Is that any better?
Yeah, just talk loud for me. I got your Chrysler Town & Country 3.3.
Right. 220,000 miles. It appears to have blown head gasket.
Okay.
And the mechanics suggested, 220,000 miles if we pull the head and we rework the head and put a head gasket on, what have you. He says, the odds are the bottom end's going to give up on you. So I said, I don't think it's worth repairing. I'd like your diagnosis.
Well, I don't agree with him. I would want to know if the oil was brown or if the oil was white. I'd want to drain all the coolant out of it and put fresh oil in it and start it up and run it around the block real quick. I want to know if it's knocking. I want to know what's going on. But it's easy to say, yeah, it needs a new. It's best for you to put a new motor in. But I think most people would understand that that could be a self-serving diagnosis. So,
and I understand that.
All okay. Right. What part of town are you in?
Well, this car happens to be in California.
Okay.
My son-in-law's car. Okay. But I had given it to him, so I'm familiar with the car.
Okay.
Anyway, the oil is somewhat brown. It needs to be changed.
Okay, but it's not white and foamy, which means there's water in it.
No.
Okay.
No, it's not white and foamy.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's it. You know, is your son-in-law somewhat technical?
No, he's
okay.
Not.
All right. Well, the reason I ask you is simple. The reason I ask you where you were at, we've tried every single head gasket sealer in the whole wide world, and we've never found one that worked until 4 years ago. We ran across this sealer, and we followed the directions to a T, and most men won't do that, and they'll say, Mark, you were wrong. And I say, you didn't follow the directions. So you follow the directions to a T, which is flush it out until the water's coming out of that motor clear. Then go drive it, get it through a heat cycle, bring it back in, put the sealer in it, drive it, do this, do that, wave a dead chicken around your head, honk the horn 3 times, but there is a procedure. And with the exception of one vehicle, this has fixed every single head gasket, and we have, it's like $150, but we have a guarantee that if it doesn't fix the head gasket, we'll give you your money back. We've never done that. Now, the one exception was a little Suzuki Samurai, and we put the block sealer in it, and nothing happened. Nothing good happened. And so we thought, well, we better drop a camera down in there. I mean, this thing had a head gasket blown on it that was as wide as the Grand Canyon. We weren't going to seal that. So we've had tremendous success, and that's why I asked if your son-in-law or your son is technical. He could do it himself. But what I will do for you, raise your right hand.
Okay.
I promise not to tell anybody what Mark's going to tell me. And here's why.
Not to tell anybody what Mark's going to tell me.
I it's a very sophisticated process to make this work. I don't want to tell people what the name of it is, because if they say it doesn't work, then all of a sudden it just queers the whole deal. I don't want that to happen. Yeah. I know what our experience is. So you're going to send me an email, mark@marksalem.com. Mark, K with a K, at marksalem.com. I'll tell you the name of the sealer. You're going to tell him to go buy it. You're going to tell him to go to a shop. You're going to tell him to hand him that thing and tell him, I want you to follow the directions exactly and get an estimate.
Okay.
And then he needs to drive it. Now, on his way to the shop, he can loosen up the radiator cap on it. He can fill it full of water, and he can drive it to the radiator shop. We're not going to develop any pressure, so we're not going to force a whole bunch of water into the cylinder. So hopefully he can find a shop within a couple miles.
All right.
Okay.
Very good. Thank you, sir.
Good luck to you. 602-508-0960. Gil's holding his breath thinking I'm going to give my cell phone again. Oh, boy. 602-508-0960. Do we have another caller? Okay. 602-508-0960. All the lines are open. There's five. If you want to talk about your car, we can. Let me talk about another shop. Okay. I told you that I was friends with all these people, and I am. Tom Blackwell and I are two peas of a pod. We are twin brothers of different mothers. Tom Blackwell's at 40th and Greenway. He knows cars really well. If you know him, you know me. And him and I can't do radio together because it turns into we probably laugh more than we should. He knows what he's doing. He's been around a very long time. And he's the only shop in that northeast area of the valley that I can recommend. I know he'll take care of your car. Real quick, the other day, a lady calls me, and she's paid, I think, $3,000 for this add-on air conditioning system for her old Chevy pickup. And she had a friend of hers that really knew a lot about cars, and she gave it to him, and he worked on it for a very long time, and he gave it back to her. And it wasn't much done, and he says, you know, I'm just too busy. So I send her to Tom, and I call Tom, and I go, this is a basket case. This is something I don't want no part of, but I know that you have less of a brain than I do. Do you want this? And he goes, heck yeah, send her over. So she takes the car over. Here's the end of the story. 2 days later, it's done. It's perfect. He had to put a fan switch in. He had to put a blower. He had to assemble the condenser in front of the radiator, the evaporator behind the dash. He had to put the compressor on. He had to plumb everything, and he had to do all the electrical and all the vacuum and all the air conditioning parts. 2 days. It blows ice cubes out of the dash, and he did some other things to kind of upgrade the truck with the customer knowing and him bidding the work. So in 2 days, this guy took an old truck with no air conditioning, and he put air in it. Like I said, it works beautifully. He also did some modifications to the cooling system because we need to make that a little bit more efficient. He has tremendous talents. And if you wave the flag in front of him like I do, then he'll bring anything in just to show that he can fix it. Nevertheless, he knows right from wrong. 40th Street and Greenway. Tom Blackwell, Blackwell Automotive. We'll be back. Minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Every Saturday we're here from 10 o'clock a.m. to noon right here on KKNT, and we talk about cars. We don't talk about politics. We don't talk about our wives or our husbands. We just talk about cars. Speaking of cars, Kurt's Auto Repair is up on I-17 in Bell. Kurt and Eric are both master techs, and I can assure you they can find problems. They're on the northeast corner of Bell and I-17. He's been around since 1987. He deals gas and diesel, and he hates me for saying this, he loves yard equipment, your weed eaters, your lawnmowers, all that kind of stuff. Just make an appointment and call him up and tell him what you got. Nevertheless, I got to tell you, one time I sent a lady who had been told by a whole bunch of places that she needed an engine, and I said, let's get one more opinion, go to Kurt's. So she calls me back and she says he fixed it for just a little over $100. The truck is fixed. Everything is fine. He put an oil pressure switch on it. The light was on. Everybody wants to sell her an engine. So Kurt diagnoses it, checks the oil pressure. It's fine. He replaces the sending unit that talks to the gauge that was lying because the sending unit was lying. He's a hero. He didn't. He could have sold her an engine. That's just not what Kurtz does. I-17 and Bell. Hey, Cal. Good morning.
Good morning.
What can I do for you?
I just called to bend your ear a little bit. I'm a proud owner of a 1995 GMC Yukon. 285,000 miles. The transmission fluid is nice and pink. I change the oil regularly. This thing runs like a champ, and compression's good on it. I've got a friend that is a head mechanic for Rimmel Construction, and he kind of helps me with my stuff. But I just wanted to bend your ear. I know you give me the story of how many times around the world this truck has been.
10.
But, yeah. And it still runs like a champ. I'm thinking, well, everything is good. Do I need to flush a tranny or do something like that?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'd do both if I were you. If it's never been touched, I'd pull the pan and replace the filter, clean the pan, and then I'd flush it. And that's going to put you north of the $300 range in the market. But here's what bothers me. We have a variety of additives in the transmission fluid, lubricities, and then we have temperature control. We don't want it to oxidize and turn to a tar. We want it to flow at low temperatures. And even though you're red and pink, I'm quite sure all the attributes of transmission and all the benefits of transmission oil are probably long gone. So I would say, now, how long is this going to live? I don't know about the transmission, buddy. I don't know. And you're going to hear a lot of old-timers go, oh, don't flush that. You'll just flush it out and it'll fail. I've never had that happen. Yep.
Yeah.
That's never happened to me. Because people will come in and say, flush it, and then they'll say, the transmission is no better, and I'll go, wait a minute. You didn't tell me better. You told me to flush the transmission fluid. I didn't know I'm chasing a symptom. I didn't know I'm trying to fix the transmission. You diagnosed it as needing a flush. I did the flush, and you say, oh, it doesn't change. Not my problem.
See, so, it's strong in the gears. It shifts very crisply. Okay.
The transmission will give you very little notice, but and you won't have to put an engine in that until your wife overheats it significantly or runs it low on oil. Those are the two reasons that we do motors. And according to the guys, their wife was driving it at the time, so that's why I threw that in.
Yeah, no wife. So
okay.
I'm the only one to blame.
Okay, now I'm going to say you and your girlfriend, and let's just leave it at that. But no, I think you should flush the transmission fluid, and I don't think that you have any problems with all of a sudden the transmission is going to give up the ghost. But it is twice the life of a normal transmission right now. Most all of them are going to fail between 100 and 150,000.
Yeah.
So you've got your money out of that. Okay.
I have gotten my money out of it, and I also wanted to say hi to you from my friend Earl, who you have known for a while.
Is he a cowboy?
Yeah.
Does he wear spurs?
Mm-hmm. And so do I.
Oh, I want to tell you something. My wife hates him like you can't believe. He took us to dinner at 16th Street in South Mountain. First of all, Earl's the best. He's not the best part of that marriage. I can tell you that much right now. So Earl gets into my wife's brand new Jaguar with a pair of spurs on, and my wife just, she is fit to be tied. And she says, oh, I know he was going to poke holes in the front of the seat and this and that. And you and I don't know you, but I can tell you Earl is the cowboy of cowboys. But I have
I've known him since high school, and we went, I'm the same age.
Okay.
And we've done numerous, maybe not too legal things together.
No need to. Did Earl ever tell you about the time he threw the brakes off of his truck and he had a trailer full of horses, and I told him that I'd fix his truck if he went over and helped the vet with one of my horses?
No, he didn't. Okay. I'll ask him.
Okay, well, let me start the story, and then I got to take a break. So Earl drives in. And Earl is, he belongs in Tombstone, Arizona. He looks the part. He's bow-legged. He talks like this all the time. So he says, Mark, he says, I got all these horses and I got to take them out of town. And I, the rear brakes, and I look and I go, it's thrown the caliper. I can fix it, but it's going to take you a while. So I said, now Earl, here's the deal. I'm going to work on your truck for free, but you got to go to my house, which is a half mile away. The vet's going to be there in about 20 minutes, and I've got a problem with my one horse. And so she's going to need you to step in my place. So he says, yeah, no problem, no problem. So I sent Earl to work with the vet. Here's what happened. As you well know, I am breeding a mare, and the horse enters the mare, but I forgot to tie the tail. And so the tail of a horse will saw a 2x4 in half. So instead of, I tied the horse, I didn't tie the tail of the female horse.
Oh, man.
So in the act of making babies, his tallywhacker got his tallywhacker got tied up in the hair of the mare. And she was done, she took about 5 steps forward, which cut his tallywhacker half off. So Earl has to go hold the tallywhacker of my horse while the vet sews it up. So he comes back. He's all bloody. And he goes, do you have any idea what I've done for the last hour? And I said, no, Earl, I don't, but I got your brakes done, buddy. You're on your way. And I just turned my back on him, and he walks over and he spins me around and goes, do you know what I've been doing for the last hour? And I said, yeah, I know you've been holding my horse's tallywhacker for an hour.
Oh, he deserves
it. Here's the best part. The vet took a picture of him holding the horse's tallywhacker.
I
have that picture, so Earl owes me, and Earl understands that if he's ever mean to me, I'm going to print that picture and put it on my Facebook page. And underneath it's going to say,
I want a copy of that picture.
Underneath the picture is going to say, you know your buddy's your best buddy when he stands in your place during a livestock emergency. Anyway, I'm probably going to get in trouble for telling that. I don't care. It's a funny story, but it's a true story. And when you hang up, I get 15 seconds left. When you hang up, you ask Earl, and I told it exactly like it was. So
I'm going to call him and remind him about
that's
it.
Tell him. We just talked about it, and I'm not going to give his last name because he'll kill me for that. Anyway, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and every Saturday we're here from 10 to 12. And the phone number, if you want to join us, ask a car question, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Let me get to something before I get to Stephen Kelly. Larry Harker's Auto has been around since 1986 or 67. Bob has been around a really long time, but here's the deal. Bob is smart, but they've got a kid named Jeremy that's part of their family. This kid has passed every ASE test they make. He's a 4 times master's. He has a master's and a doctorate and everything in between. He doesn't have the experience that Bob and I do with respect to industry standards and standards, you know, industry standards and stuff like that and what you should do and shouldn't do. But he's probably the best technician I've ever met. And there's been time, and he's a lot smarter than I am when it comes to broad things. So I've called him a couple times to ask him to help me and guide me, and he's always done that. You can't do that. But if you need somebody and you got a problem where every time you turn right, the something on the car barks, then if you live near 38th Avenue and Indian School, I'd take it over to Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Steve, how can I help you?
Yes, good morning. I talked to you last week, different issue. But we did talk a little bit about my 2001 F-250 Super Duty.
Uh-huh.
And more than 10 years ago, the truck was stolen. And the police chased the guy the next day. They spotted it. And anyway, to make a long story short, he kind of creamed the right front suspension. I had it repaired to what I considered the good a shop as I could find. And ever since then, it has had a very mild drift. You notice on the highway, not so much in the city.
Okay.
And sort of like not enough tow-in.
No.
So I've had multiple alignments.
No.
Over the years.
No. We're not.
Okay.
We're not going to let you diagnose it because everybody's going to think the same thing. So if you messed with the toe, you made a mistake. But go on.
I didn't mess with the toe.
Okay.
I said it drifted like there was not enough toe.
No, that's not true. But continue on. Just tell the story. You go ahead.
Okay.
But I'm going to call you on things that when you. I know other people are telling you this, but continue on.
Anyway, it drifts. You're always correcting mildly.
Can I address that?
Sure.
I mean, what you said to me means everything. And you said on the highway it drifts to the right, and on the city it's fine. The highway road is flat. The city street is sloped from the center of the roadway to the curb, so water runs off of it. We have a tough time aligning a car for both, especially your Ford pickup. I mean, it's one of many. So what we're going to do is we're going to use caster, not camber, and not toe, to make it on a. So we say, Steve, what do you normally drive on? And you say highway. Fine, I'm going to get it going straight down the road. But Steve, when you're in city streets, it's going to want to drift a little bit to the right. Now, if I set it for city streets where it's flat and goes straight on a city street, then it's going to want, when you get up on the highway, it's going to want to drift a little bit to the left. So I'm going to dial a little left drift or a little right drift, but I'm going to do it with a caster. So toe doesn't have anything to do with that. Nothing.
Maybe I misspoke, but when I said drifts, it drifts left and right. It goes either way.
That,
whether you're on flat, of course you don't notice it much on city streets because of the crown.
Okay, that's easy. That's easy. Are you capable of laying underneath the front end of that thing?
Sure.
Okay, so you get your wife out there, and you put your wife's hand at 12 o'clock, and you say, and the key's on, you can have the motor running, it doesn't make any difference to me. The key's on, and she's going to take her hand, and she's going to move it to the right, about 3 inches, which is the width of her hand. And so she's going to say, centered, honey, right, centered, left, centered, right. Now you're going to follow from the steering column through the gearbox, through the side of the gearbox, and then out the pitman arm. Then the pitman arm's connected to a drag link. Then the drag link is going to have a joint on that end, on the passenger end. Then it's going to have a tie rod on that side. Then it's going to have a bar that crosses to the left front tire. You're going to look for play in all those joints. The play is the top sits still, but the bottom moves before the top moves with it. So the bottom has play, but the top is steady. So when she turns left, the bar will go left, and you'll see, but the top bar doesn't move. And so when she goes right, so you're looking at all the joints. And if you've got play in the front end, which you're describing as play, then it's just a matter of looking for it. That's just not hard.
You didn't let me finish the story.
Okay, we need to kind of be.
I've added the multiple places. Strictly Diesel is the last one. They replaced several suspension components, and they wouldn't address the drift issue until I got new tires. I got new tires. I did the alignment at local outfit, not Strictly, and he said. Alignment's good, not going to charge you anything, said, but you got issue with your right rear. So my question is, does that make any sense whatsoever that my right rear could be cattywampus as opposed to front end?
No. You know, something's wrong with this level of communication. It sounds to me like you're directing the traffic. And with all due respect, there's lots of people that want to direct the repair of their car, and I'm not interested in that. If you come into my shop and start telling me what to fix, I'm going to bid you real high, and you're going to leave and say I'm a jerk, and you're going to say he's really expensive. But if they were right and it was a tire, do you know how easy it is to verify that? You swap the fronts. You move the right to the left and the left to the right. If it's still got the drift, then it ain't a tire. If it drifts to the left, it is a tire. That's it. You just swap the fronts. As far as the rear tire being out of whack, in order for to agree with that, I'd have to have abnormal tire wear. So if the rear tire is too far back or too far forward, we'll have abnormal tire wear. So we look at the right, and we look at the left, and the right has an edge wear on the inside or the outside, depending on whether it's leaning in or out. And if the left side's fine, then yeah, the right rear's out. But it's not going to cause the car to drift. So I want to tell you something. There's a few guys in town that can do alignments like there's no tomorrow. They understand the symptoms and everything else. But if you've had the front end rebuilt and strictly diesel stamped that as okay, then all of a sudden somebody says it's tires, swap the fronts and go drive it. But have you ever demonstrated this to anybody?
To strictly diesel.
Okay, so you took them for a ride.
They took it for a drive.
No. No, I said, have you ever demonstrated this to any shop?
No.
Okay. Well, that's a problem, too. It's your responsibility after having everybody guess on your truck to say, if you want to try to fix this, you're going to send somebody, your alignment guy, with me. And we're going to go on the freeway, and I'm going to show him. And then we're going to get on a city street, and I'm going to show him. That's what needs to be done. He needs to know what you're talking about. So I'm, like I said, that's us old gray-haired guys are going to say to you, it's going to drift one way or the other. So what do you want? You want it to go down the straight highway, or do you want it to go straight on a city street? You got your choice. We can dial the front end however you want. But in your particular case, I'm guessing you got one or the other. You haven't said a thing about tire wear. Not a thing about tire wear. And tires, the right rear, and this idea that it's too much toe or too little toe would all create obvious tire wear problems. So I don't know. If you're up there and you're strictly diesel, and go see Tom Blackwell and insist that he or one of his guys take it for a ride. And if any, Blackwell doesn't have much hair, but but it's gray if he did. And see if he can make you happy. But he's going to want to, you're going to show him the problem. And the 51's not too far away from there. Got to take a break. 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 45 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Before I do anything else, I'm going to take Kelly. And Kelly, thank you for waiting. How can I help you?
Hey, first of all, thank you for your program. I don't listen to it a lot, but I learn something every time.
Well, thank you for that. So, that's my intention. That's my intention.
Yeah, that's just great. And I'm not a car guy, but I got a 2013 Kia Sportage, 125,000. Nothing's wrong with it. How far will it go?
Every motor that I've replaced in the last 10 years has been abused. So we've only replaced motors on ones that have been terribly overheated or run low on oil. That's it. We haven't replaced one in a very, very long time. I think there was one of my guys called my bluff a while back. He goes, "What about the green Ford truck?" And I go, "Yeah, you're right. It had 400,000 miles on it."
It had it coming, huh?
Yeah. And another thing is, and I'll add another one, overheat it really bad, run low on oil. And when it starts blowing smoke that looks like a James Bond car, and it's coming through the rings, and it's not sucking it through the intake manifold, and we do a compression test, and a wet, dry one shows us everything, then you have it. Now, on your Kia Sportage, you can't do that because you'll plug that catalytic converter up and cost yourself another $1,000. But when it starts blowing lots of blue smoke, knocking, or you overheat it, that's... But other than that, really and truly, if you'll remember, I'm looking real fast here, we had a guy here with... hold on just a minute. Oh, yeah, a 95 GMC Yukon at 285,000 miles. So I want to tell you, I have a significant amount of vehicles in the fleet I am responsible for that are in the 2, 3, 4, and 500,000-mile range. So,
well,
just...
the thing of it is, it's the tightest vehicle I've ever owned, and I'm a Honda Toyota guy, you know. But it's just, you know, I do all the fluids, you know, on schedule, plugs, all that stuff. But I'll tell you what, it's been a good vehicle. So I was just curious, you know.
Well, let me.
And it looks good yet.
Yeah. Well, no. When the Kia and the Hyundai first came out, there was nothing worse than the debut they had. Those cars were the biggest pile of horse manure you can imagine.
I think I remember that.
Today, they are very comparable with the Toyota and Honda line. Yeah. Very comparable.
Well, so, that's the way I feel about this vehicle.
This has been a transition that we've rarely seen. Usually when we get a bad, you know, a model, a makes of cars, they don't last long. But right. In this particular case, they've really stepped up to the plate. Now, I know there's lots of guys that, I don't want to drive a foreign car, and I don't want to do this and all that, and Korea and Japan and all that kind of stuff. It's your personal opinion, and I'm not going to take that argument on. But I'm happy to know your Kia, but if you said to me, am I happy or not? I would have bet 2-to-1 odds that you'd have been happy with your Kia Sportage. And there is a slight price difference between them and their competitors, and they usually win that. So, well, good luck to you, Kelly. Thank you very much. And I think if you'll keep your 16-year-old grandson out of the car on a Friday night, you'll probably have a better luck in keeping that thing alive. Gilbert, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a 2017 Nissan Rogue. I bought it last April. It had 25,000 miles on it. It's got 35 on it now. When I bought it from the dealer, local dealer, they told me I'd never need it to change oil and transmission. I looked in the book, and it says around 60,000. And I talked to a friend of mine who was going to buy one of these, but he didn't because he told me those transmissions are problematic. They have a belt instead of clutches. It shifts very smooth. Everything's fine. But right now I'm getting close to 36,000, and I'm thinking about changing the oil in the transmission. I called the local dealer. He wanted $329. I thought that was too much. So I called a different dealer, not in this immediate area. He wanted $229 to do the same thing. But as I looked at it and everything I could find on this car, it's got a drain plug. It's got a filter or a screen inside of it. The problem I have is I can't get a manual on it. All the parts stores say it's too new. I don't think it's too new. It's almost 3 years old.
I can explain this. It's a sealed transmission.
Yeah.
And so what's going on that has never happened before? It's called a CVT.
Yes.
Okay. CVT transmission. I got good news and bad news, but I'll tell you about the fluid first. You have to have special equipment to pull this off. You pull the drain plug, you drain it out. Then you have to find the plug, which is also hidden, and you pump fluid in it until it comes out the top plug, and then you're done. You have to know what to do, and frankly, some of those things takes us 5 or 10 minutes to find all the orifices in that transmission.
Yeah, well, looking on the computer and on YouTube and everything, I found there is a plug on the side of the transmission they tell you to take out, but also the dipstick. The tube does not have a dipstick in it, but I did get the plug out the top, and I stuck a hose on in there, measured the level in there, and they on the computer told me to drain the fluid out, measure it, and then put that exact amount back in down through that dipstick tube.
Okay. I'm not a fan of YouTube and the computer. If they were that good, they'd be working for guys like me for $50,000 to $100,000. So we got guys sitting at home. I'm just not interested in trying to hold a discussion about some guy on YouTube or on the computer.
Yeah.
I don't care where they come from. The issue is so you figure it's an inch low, and you stick your coat hanger in there. So then you're going to pull it, drain it, and then you're going to fill it till it's an inch. There's no specification on that inch. There's nothing that says it's an inch. How do you know? How do you know what it's supposed to be? So you're going to bet your transmission. Here's the bad news. CVTs are really tough. First of all, nobody builds them. I know the three best transmission shops in this valley. Two of them are wholesale only. One of them is retail. They won't even touch a CVT. I won't touch a CVT. All I'm going to do is put another one in. There's no repairs. There's no Band-Aids. There's no nothing. It's a good transmission for 100,000 miles. It's a good transmission for fuel economy. It's a good transmission for really smooth shifting. It's a good transmission, but it's not the best. It's been a problem since day one. The only place you can buy the transmissions is from the dealer, and they're pretty doggone proud of them. So we will buy from the dealer if we have to replace one, but I don't know that I would chance it. And the $200 or $300 includes the fluid, and it includes all the stuff that goes with it. So there's going to be a specification. If you want to find that, then that's fine. But usually we pump through the bottom, and we wait till it comes out the top. So I don't know. But I'd have to look yours up. I could very well be wrong, and if so, I'll raise my hand and say I was wrong. But I would caution you, because you said you got, 35,000 miles on it. So you got 65, yeah. In my opinion, you got 65 left. I think you run a risk of shortening the life of that CVT if you don't do it right. And so I'm not trying to drive you to any shop. I'm just telling you the risk, the reward.
Yeah.
It's not worth the risk. So anyway, yeah. Thank you, Gilbert. Thank you very much. Got to move on to Sam. Sam, how are you?
Oh, doing pretty good. How are you?
Good.
I've got a 2006 Nissan Altima with a four-cylinder 2.5.
Okay.
I just had it's my granddaughter's car, and I'm working on it, but I had the code checked because it's vibrating really bad.
Uh-huh.
This was at S&S Tire, one of your shops, I believe. And they said that it was misfiring on cylinder one.
Okay.
So my question is, if I replace the spark plugs, it could still be the coil.
And underneath the coil is a little piece of rubber hose that attaches the bottom of the coil to the spark plug. It could be that.
Okay, is that the boot?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of doing that. You got three possibilities, the spark plug, the boot, and the coil. If you're going to do it yourself, why don't you just swap the coil with another cylinder? Why don't you just swap the spark plug with another cylinder and see if the problem moves? So okay. The only way to guarantee that you're going to get it is just replace all three. But if you want to have fun, swap the coil first and then move the boot next and then move the spark plug next. And just do it to the cylinder next. So you pull two plugs, two boots, and two coils.
Okay. What firing or what order is it in, from left to right? 1, 2, 3, 4, or
doesn't make any difference. I don't care if you do the end ones. I don't care if you do the two middles. It doesn't make any difference. How they fire doesn't mean anything at all.
Okay.
You're gonna unplug the coil and just move the coil, but the wire is gonna stay with that cylinder.
Okay, right. Just take the coil off and put the wire back on it. Okay.
Yeah, move the coil to 2 or 3 or 4, and if it's number one, then move the coil to 2 or 3, 4. But you're going to move everything to the same cylinder, okay?
And then if it gets a different code?
Well, you're going to do it one at a time. You're going to swap the coil first and clear the code and go drive it. And if it comes back, then it's not the coil. Then you can do the boot next. And at that point, if it's the boot, then the code won't come back. But if it's not, then it's the spark plug. So it's a little bit of work. The alternative is to replace all three.
Okay.
That's it. That's the alternative. Now, we do the same thing. I'm not telling you to do what my seasoned guys do. Because I'll tell you what, you can put a coil and you can put a spark plug in it. You can chase your butt for the rest of your life. And that stupid little boot has got a little bitty hole in it. You take the coil out with the spark plug. You sit it on metal. And all of a sudden, you open the gap on the spark plug real wide. And all of a sudden, you see that the spark's jumping from the boot. And you go, oh, my God. Now, when you pull those apart, you're going to need some dielectric grease to go on both sides of the boot.
Okay.
Dielectric grease. And it doesn't cost much. It's a couple dollars for a little bitty tube, but it's a white petroleum jelly, and it holds moisture back from the boot, and it also helps conduct electricity through the boot.
All right. Sounds like a plan.
Okay. Good luck to you, Sam. Right. Good luck to you.
Thanks.
All righty. When it comes to auto repair, it's also important that if you're up there near Deer Valley and I-17, Action Auto Repair is up there. I've known Tom, who's the owner, since 1983. He's good. I met him when we, remember those big boxes we used to buy and people would come in and say, put the car on the scope. Well, back then in 1983, we had two competitors. We had Allen and we had Bear. And Tom was repping the Allen, and he came and showed us all it was, and then we looked at the Bear. These pieces of equipment, my first house in 1973 was $33,000. These pieces of equipment were $40,000 to $50,000. Now, if you could make the piece of equipment dance, you made a lot of money, because that equipment would tell you what's wrong. All you had to do is ask it the right questions and to be able to understand the readings it's given you. So anyway, I didn't buy his scope. He's still my friend, and he's still a good guy. So if you're near I-17 in Deer Valley and you don't have a shop, may I suggest you go on the northwest corner, Action Auto Repair, maybe have an oil change to see how they treat you. My email address is mark@marksalem.com. If I offended you, call me and tell me, and I will sincerely apologize. If you didn't like my horse story, I will sincerely apologize. But we talk about cars. You're more than welcome to send me a car problem via email, but I want you to also give me your phone number. When I call, it's from a blocked line. If you don't answer, I call back and I say, hey, this is Mark Salem. So if I call again, I'm going to say, hey, don't hang up on me. This is Mark Salem.